Acclaimed Nigerian author Wole Soyinka has written everything from plays to poetry, essays, and novels. He was the first Black African person to win the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1986, and he has taught and lectured all over the world. At the age of 88, you could say this writer has gained some perspective on politics and society. And that's what we wanted to speak with him about when we caught up with him on a recent visit to the United States. His homeland of Nigeria is a former British colony. It gained independence in 1960 when Soyinka was in his 20s. So I asked him his reaction to the death of Queen Elizabeth II.
Well, Queen Elizabeth has been more or less a symbolic head of the Commonwealth. So there's no sense of, governance contact between the royal family and Nigeria and presumably all other nations. But of course, she represents a certain era, a certain relationship, and one feels saddened for the family and for the people of England as well. But basically, I don't think her death is going to affect anything going on in Nigeria. I think Nigeria would be more concerned with who's the new Prime Minister of England. I think that is where all the sights are beamed in Nigeria.
You know, you have written a lot about corruption and misbehavior in government. And I wonder if you feel that part of the at least administrative, legislative, governmental struggles that not just Nigeria, but other African nations have had can be traced back to the youth of some of these nations, that they gained their independence so very recently. Do you think that matters?
No, I don't like to make excuses. Definitely, the immediate trajectory of former colonies is already handicapped by the colonial experience, from taking orders from across the ocean to being in charge of your own affairs. One shouldn't expect it to be a smooth process. Unfortunately, you see, the British and all other colonial powers, they did a rather messy job in getting out. So I admit, I absolutely insist on our memories not being cauterized in that respect. However, I believe that leadership since then ought to have overcome a number of these problems. I don't think that right now we should be having such a stream of refugees across the Sahara, across the Atlantic, desperate, just for sheer basic economic survival. And the reason is that our productive processes were completely bastardized by the actions of the British when they were leaving. And that indentureship, we still feel it. But again, I keep saying, our leaders by now should really have overcome all those handicaps.
I was reading an interview with someone from East Africa who was saying that, if nothing else, the death of Elizabeth II, while sad, represents closure, the end of an era. I wonder if you think that's true, that it brings some measure of relief, but also, is there some other way that Britain could have brought about closure? You've talked about the mistakes that the nation made, but what could Britain have done to make this easier? Could they have apologized? What could they have done?
We're getting into the realm, shall we say, of reparations now, if you like, or I prefer the word restitution. First of all, I don't accept the fact that the death of Queen Elizabeth is the end of an era. It is, from the historic point of view of Europe and for the United Kingdom, of course. But, I mean, the Queen is dead, long live the King. Isn't that the expression? And it's more than just a mere slogan. I doubt very much if the relationship is going to change. And to look at the death of a symbolic head of an organization as an opportunity for other things, better or worse, it's a very strange way of looking at it. I don't feel it that way. I don't believe that there's a sharp cleavage now between the past and the future simply because of this death. I don't think so. Our problems are far too intense and far too, you know, almost intractable than that. Nigeria, the situation in Nigeria, West Africa, the level, for instance, of insecurity, of poverty, for instance, the division between the classes, the haves and have-nots, and so on, which really have widened in a really disastrous way. It'd be very naive to expect that all this will change simply because the titular head of an organization to which we belong is dead.
So you have also, I mean, you are a global celebrity, a literary celebrity. You're a Nobel Prize winner. You have been visiting and lecturing in the United States for one, but other nations as well. You were educated in the UK, at least for part of it. And that gives you a unique perspective, especially on not just other governments, but the way democracy is doing globally.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, when you look at the state of democracy now, especially in some place like the United States, which has long called itself the bastion of democracy, where democracy is in trouble, what goes through your mind?
What is on my mind is that I wish the United States would avoid setting a bad example. Because what happened in the States over the past few years, the emergence of Trump in particular, and his persistence in subverting civil society, it gives joy to the dictators, to the corrupt, to the unconscionable, all over the continent. And so when it's bad news in the United States, I'm afraid it's worse news for third world countries. Look at the deterioration of situation in countries like Russia, for instance. Their liberal democracy was supposed to have taken hold. And now you have this feudalist thug called Putin, who's now flexing his muscle all over the place. Also giving encouragement to those violent, petty dictators that we have on the continent. I don't consider it a coincidence, for instance, that there's a rash of reversals with the military coming back in some of the countries on the African continent. So the combination of all these, both the, shall we say, the expected exemplars, deterioration, and those reversals in places like the Soviet Union, which was supposed to be a progressive nation and been transforming itself, it doesn't spell much optimism for many people in the third world. It's a great pity.
So I also wanted to touch on another issue that the U.S. is grappling with, other nations as well, but here in the United States, we're seeing a rise in censorship. We are seeing librarians under attack, organized groups trying to pull books off of shelves. You are no stranger to repression and censorship. You were thrown into jail because of things you'd written. You continued to write. I wonder if you have any advice for American authors and librarians based on your experience with fighting censorship for so long.
This is not the first time it's been tried. I remember some years, especially after the 9/11 catastrophe. You see, the fascist opportunists are always lurking in the wings. And that is something which the United States need to be aware of. I mean, it's like even going all the way back to the Marcotide on American activities period. This is the meaning of this kind of censorship.
Are you referring to the McCarthy era?
Yeah, I'm referring to that. And librarians must find a way of resisting it. And elections are coming. And where the danger is that when America is close to elections, candidates, whether Republican and the Democratic Party, both Senate and House of Representatives, begin to hedge their bets. They don't want to offend a section of the electorate, and so they water down even their Democratic pronouncements on their Democratic credentials and program just to get over the hump of elections. And that is when you get one Trump, then you get two Trumps, and then three Trumps, and you have an entire community of Trumps. And so Mr. Donald Trump won't have to do anything anymore. He'll just let his lieutenants do the dirty work for him. So the Trumpian danger is not over in the United States.
Wole Soyinka, Nigerian playwright, poet, teacher, Nobel laureate, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.